This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to the Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. And it is now 7:48 in the morning, Wednesday, the 5th of August. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Nias Azadullah, Southeast Asia lead of the Global Labour Organization. Because about a month ago, our Human Resource Minister, Dato Sri M. Saravanan, announced a freeze in the new intake of foreign labour until the end of the year. Now, the rationale behind this was to reduce Malaysia's reliance on foreign workers as well as to prioritise locals for jobs. But since then, the policy has been updated.
Okay, so last week the government said that three sectors would be allowed to hire foreign workers, and they were namely plantation, construction and agriculture. However, local labour coalitions, including the MTUC, which stands for the Malaysian Trade Unions Congress, have decried the move as economic suicide. They said that curtailing foreign labour without addressing stagnant wages would not solve local unemployment.
So currently in Malaysia, there are about 2 million legal foreign workers, and the manufacturing sector employs the highest number of them, followed by construction and plantations. So how have these industries, with the concentrated number of foreign workers, coped in the wake of restrictions on foreign labour? For more of this, we have on the line with us Dr. Nias Azadullah, Southeast Asia Lead Global Labour Organization. I want to ask by first question, will the government's decision to restrict migrant workers to three sectors push Malaysians to take up the slack, especially in this very uncertain employment environment?
Thank you. So just to put it in perspective, the government has imposed a ban that spares construction, plantation and agriculture sectors where the jobs are known to be dirty and dangerous. So that leaves us with services and manufacturing, where work conditions and pay are relatively better. So these are sectors where jobs are less stigmatized. So in theory, there should be a response from the local workforce. There isn't anything that should hold them back from taking up these newly vacant jobs.
Yeah, Dr. Nias, pay aside, right, salary aside, people also being put off by these challenging working conditions. Has there been much effort to improve in recent years?
So Malaysia, the government does have a number of legal provisions and laws, Occupational Health and Safety Act 1994, and then a Minimum Standard of Housing and Amenities Act 1990. But I don't think the problem is so much about the legal provisions for work conditions. The challenges of implementation and poor inspection, it's a problem of compliance and enforcement. And that's where there has been lack of improvement in recent years.
And just wondering whether there's any evidence from other economies, perhaps, where if you have this compliance and you have this enforcement, you actually will attract more local talent?
So what we certainly know from the experience of other countries, advanced countries such as South Korea, Singapore and Australia, is that the so-called 3D sectors, where we see high presence of foreign workers in Malaysia, are equally attractive to locals in those countries. And that is a reflection of better work conditions compared to Malaysia.
So even if industries wanted to move away from foreign labour dependency, that's kind of like the holy grail. Obviously, it can't be done overnight. So how can they gradually ease out of doing that?
That's a great question. I think we need to take into account the concerns of industry owners. What everyone is expecting is predictability and good communication. If we reflect back on the 11th Malaysia plan, it had a clear cap on 15% total workforce that could comprise of foreign workers, a target that the government set to be achieved by 2020. And here we are in 2020, and the figure is still in the region of 25%. So what has happened during the 11th Malaysia plan was not enough follow through. And now suddenly in times of pandemic, there is this abrupt change where the employers and business owners are forced to move to a new labor regime. So this is certainly something we have to avoid, that policy changes have to be on a consultative basis, in a collaborative mode. We have to take into account the fact that farms are in distress, they're facing a demand shock, they're cutting costs to survive, and at this time, any abrupt policy change can be counterproductive. Policy changes, therefore, have to be pre-announced. Without employers, a well-intentioned policy cannot be fully implemented. So we need all parties on the table so that changes are agreed, implemented gradually. When we are talking about graduation to a zero migrant worker equilibrium.
And Dr. Nias, is it as simple as if you pay higher pay, locals will do these jobs? And if so, would a blanket ban drive companies to essentially keep notching up pay until they get people to take up these jobs?
So higher pay will certainly solve what in economics we call the incentive problem. Okay? So it will certainly draw in more workers. But that's only 50% of the story. We also have to look into the demand side, the employer's concern, that employers also need to balance their higher wage bills against what they gain in terms of output and labor productivity. So in my opinion, one-sided reforms will not work. If added production costs exceed benefits in terms of added output, market processes will not adjust. Just to, again, put it in perspective, as we speak, current manpower-related costs in Malaysian businesses account for 20% of operating costs. So if employers are to increase pay, operating costs will go up, they would also look for higher output, or at least that local workers would work up to the same productivity level as foreign workers.
And Dr. Nias, you mentioned policy, right? So I'm just curious, in a kind of a medium and longer term perspective, what kind of policies should the government adopt to actually improve the pay or even the working conditions of Malaysians so that they will take up these jobs?
So one is policy choice. And the other challenge is sequencing, timing, and implementation. So again, if we go back to policy, the 11th Malaysia Plan clearly had a target. The reason why it wasn't achieved by 2020 was what happened in the subsequent years. Soon after announcing the new target, the government declared a bilateral agreement with another developing country to bring in hundreds and thousands of foreign workers. So this sort of flip-flop messages confused industry leaders. There was a lack of seriousness in the policy intent. So this is something we definitely want to avoid in the coming months. But in terms of specific policy choice, an attractive one is the multi-tier levy mechanism, where employers pay a levy as a proportion of foreign workers they employ against local workers, and the government can gradually increase this. Once again, that timeline of increment has to be communicated well in advance so that business owners have ample time to adjust. And there has to be credibility in that plan. The government shouldn't make other policy choices that can confuse the business owners and indicate that there can be renegotiation in this. So this combination of sequencing, policy credibility, and smart policy choices that are endorsed by business leaders and implemented in consultation of them would be key to the success for Malaysia's graduation to a zero migrant labor market in maybe 5 years from now.
Yeah, so quick question on automation. Will this foreign worker freeze encourage more investment to automate assembly lines and other processes like that? And will it have an effect on attracting more local workers as a result?
Okay, so yes, in theory, Malaysia is not an economy where the rate of automation is high. If we go by estimate for robot density in local manufacturing sector, per 10,000 workers in Malaysia, it's only 34 robots compared to the Asian average of 63. So in theory, there is scope for automation. But we have to take into account the fact that foreign workers are in sectors where the jobs are repetitive, but these are also you know, small and medium enterprises where the cost of automation may be too high for them. So they alone cannot do it. There has to be government support to allow them transit to an automated production regime where with due credit facilities. But without that, they face barriers to shift to the current heavy, unskilled labor dependence to the machine-dependent automated production regime.
And that was Dr. M. Nias Azadullah, Southeast Asia lead of Global Labour Organization. I think the highlight is basically whatever policy you want to roll out, make sure that you communicate with the stakeholders and there's consistency, no abrupt sudden changes so that businesses aren't disrupted either way. But we are heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, the breakfast grill, where Chuang will be speaking to Sharul Hamdam, Deputy Chief of UMNO Youth, and Tama Pile, co-founder of Undi 18. Stay tuned for that, happening in a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.